Good morning, everybody. This is Jeff J. Brown, China Rising Radio Sinoland, on the beaches of Normandy in France, and an old friend and a wonderful guest always on the show today, Dr. Modi Nisani. How are you doing, Modi?
I'm doing very well, thank you. Calling from foothills of
the Modi it lives in Argentina, and we've been trying to connect because his connection is not great. He lives out in the countryside, so let's keep our fingers crossed that it works today. We're going to talk today. He needs no introduction. His first three shows that we did years ago for years were the most popular shows that I ever did. Then we did another show recently. He has put at least one republished at least one of his articles. If you add all of the visitors up that have seen his work on my website, it's over 100,000 people. So, as a college professor, his biggest lectures have been on China Rising Radio Sinoland. So extremely popular, extremely informative, extremely motivated, and extremely positive. I'm lovely to love having him on today to talk about his brand new book that he just published, called 8 Billion Cheers for Direct Democracy. It's a free download. I will put his website plus the links for his two books, his other one, Encyclopedia of Domestic Assassinations, that we have talked about, A Revolutionary's Toolkit, which we talked about. And so really, really, really happy to have you on today, Modi. Thanks for getting up at 3 o'clock in the morning.
Thank you for inviting me.
He's having to get up so early because his bandwidth is so poor during the day. So we're trying to beat everybody else waking up in Argentina. So anyway, I am excited to read the book. It just came out, so I'll be honest. I have not read it yet, but I have ticked off. It's 231 pages long. Or 261 pages long. It's a real book. And the first thing I wanted to ask him about is one of his subheadings is usurping the word democracy. What does that mean for you, Modi?
Well, it means, first of all, the definition of democracy, of course, the word itself comes from the Greeks. And it means people rule. Now, in ancient Greece, in Greek democracy, and the most notable of which is the nation of Athens, or the city-state of Athens, the people actually ruled. I cover it in chapter 4 of my book, which gives an extensive coverage, comprehensive coverage of Athenian democracy, and by implication also other democracies. Now, in that case, the people were in charge of everything. Now, I should qualify. The people, we mean the male citizens, Athens, not women, not slaves, not foreigners, but the citizen body comprised of males were a company of equals. And every decision that's been made has been made by the collective, by the people themselves, justifying, of course, the word democracy. There were no judges in Athenian trials. Those of us who read the Apology by Plato realized that there are 500 people sitting there, 500 people chosen at random from the entire Athenian population. There are no judges, and they are the ones, they listen to the pros and the cons of any given case, and they decided whether to go to war or whether to start a new enterprise of any sort, whether to build new ships for the Navy. Whatever it is, it's the people, the male citizens of Athens, all 40,000 of them typically 50,000, all of them collectively made the decision. Now, equally, chapter 3 of the book covers cultural anthropology. And again, in that case, for most of human, people lived in direct democracy. The Huron of North America, the Tasmanians of Tasmania, wherever they were, people lived in democracy. There were no, as I told you before, there were no chiefs. The misconception that of the chief so-and-so is a mistake. The chief had no authority. The only authority he had is the authority that came with his bravery, with his wisdom, with his experience. He could only, any chief, so-called, he didn't exist, but could appeal to his fellow citizens, fellow tribesmen, or fellow batsmen, but he did not have power. Now, to the second, the complementary part of that answer is, for example, the United States, Argentina, France, Russia, China. Okay, China does not call itself democracy, but the United States has the audacity, and France has the audacity of calling itself a democracy. But that is simply, it's not even a pseudo democracy. It's a joke. It's a pure and oligarchy. Ask yourself, okay, if it's a democracy, whatever the people want, the people get. But that's not the case in the United States. Over and over and over again, what the people want is one thing, and what the governing oligarchs, what the rulers are doing is an entirely different thing. And it's not only my opinion. Ex-President Carter says the United States is an oligarchy, and many others. To believe that the United States is a democracy, where the people actually have power, it's simply, I mean, it's beyond ridiculous. It's ludicrous. It's, we don't have any power at all. And the question, of course, arises, how do they control us? But that's a different story. They control us by, first of all, campaign financing, so-called, which is in reality sunshine bribery. They control us with information. They control all the major news outlets. They control our schools. They control our medical establishment. They control everything. So, some people believe mistakenly that they have a choice between a Democrat and a Republican. But it's a joke. On both parties, it's a uniparty. Both parties are agreed on just about everything. It's just window dressing. And I can go on and on. But it's the fundamental fact is that none of us live in the democracy. There are shades. Switzerland is more democratic than the United States. Norway and Sweden, slightly more democratic. It's, but both states, the Greek would be, the Greek would laugh if they claim the United States is a, give you one more example, and that is income distribution. This is what's happening now in France, the United States, the Western world. Income distribution is so scandalously terrible. I mean, you can look, go on YouTube and see all these poor people who are working full time and live on the street because they cannot make ends meet. Now, if we were in a democracy, just ask yourself, wouldn't, if we really had power, wouldn't we vote to have more in our hands rather than bail out bankers? According to one study, I think Harvard or something, if we had, we are getting cheated to in the amount of $42,000 a year. Your wife, could have $42,000 a year more if we stop that racket of, for example, of bailing, what does it mean, bailing out the banks? We are giving the billionaires more money. And it's getting worse and worse. Anybody who believes that we've been in the market has better, I don't know, is mistaken.
How long in Athens? Because I've heard that it went through phases of democracy and anarchy and totalitarianism, and it kind of went in a cycle. How long in total did the direct democracy succeed in Athens?
It was almost 200 years.
Almost 200
with
years.
You have to be careful when we talk about direct democracy. That's chapter two of the book. It's called Conceptual Brewery. We all have a bias, whether we realize it or not. We have a bias against direct democracy. Why? Because for 2,500 years, the people that control, people control everywhere, of course, they do not want direct democracy. They want all the power and all the riches to themselves. Mm-hmm. It's a concerted of repression, oppression against everything. What if anybody wants to delve into something, the first thing they've got to realize that the terrible bias that we have been inculcated can simply affect. I'll give you a couple of examples, then answer the question directly. We're one of the greatest philosophers, okay, we are taught, is Plato. Now, Plato was an aristocrat, a very wealthy one, and his goal in his political writings is a very simple one. It doesn't sound very nice, but that's the way most people are. He is out there to protect his own interests. So he makes a mockery of, in his writing, democracy, called whatever. And that's, you know, I happen to have a degree in philosophy. That's, And it took me a long time to realize that that guy is really totalitarian. What he's preaching is more or less something like the Nazi Germany. I mean, that's how bad it is. Now, another example, you consider this historian, a great historian, but bias is bias. So, and that goes down the ages. We know about Plato, but nobody, or almost no one, knows about Democritus. Now, Democritus was even richer than Plato, but he was a Democrat. As the name suggests, it's kind of interesting. Democritus, all his parents were Democrats too. He was very wealthy, but he was a Democrat. Now, do people know about him? Do they teach about him in philosophy curriculum? No. Plato said, need to burn, according to one of the sources, his books should be burned. And they proceeded to do it. So right there, you have to realize when you say anything we hear about democracy, the first thing we have to overcome is bias. Now, to go directly to your question, once we remove the barriers, Athens was a direct democracy, really democracy. We have to have adjective direct, because now we have United States calling itself a democracy. So direct democracy is really Athenian called democracy. And it existed for 200 years, and almost 200 years. So it's a very long time. Twice, you're right that they were interrupted. Twice under the pressure of the Peloponnesian War between totalitarian Sparta, oligarchy Sparta, and Athens, twice there were a coup, oligarchy coup, but twice it has been removed. The first one in 411 BC, so it's almost 2,400 years ago, more. And the second one in 403. And after Athens was defeated, but not really by Sparta, it's a complicated story. But after Athens was defeated, after almost a 30-year war, the Spartans and the Americans were now defeated and so vicious oligarchy. And against the odds, they are restored democracy. So it existed with these brief interruptions for 200 years. It would have existed maybe until now, but it was stopped with the rise of the Macedonians, Philip, and then his son, Alexander. And they are the ones who destroyed, who put an end to. It wasn't by internal. So all this, the short interruptions, not because democracy was unstable. It existed for generations and generations, at least six generations. It came to an end by outside forces, who of course revealed, the time of Philip and tyrannical son, Alexander, dictator, kings, whatever you want to call them, of course did not want a direct democracy as the model for, and what we have to realize, what we have to realize too, when we're talking direct democracy, my book is, does not, we have one, I have one chapter, which is theoretical. In other words, I find theoretical basis justify direct democracy. That basis, it's at least solid, any other, but most important part of the book, the convincing part, is empirical. We don't have result theory, because social science theory, you can just about prove anything you want in social sciences. You can prove that giving there are social scientists, a trickle-down theory. You want to solve the poverty problem? Well, just give money to the rich. I mean, you can prove anything you want in a social science, if you're so inclined. But what the book does is empirical. I show, first of all, the anthropology. There were, most of our democratic society. Every tribe, human, country, whatever it was, democratic, they were egalitarian. No one lorded over anybody else. And they were very successful. It existed for thousands of human existence. Most of human existence was democratic, number one. Athens. Now, if you look at Athens, it was the most, and there were many handicaps. Slavery certainly was awful. Certainly discrimination is concerned. But for the male citizens, a great number of people, it was a direct democracy. And now, Athens, I think that it was the most powerful and culturally and militarily, the most successful society, especially culturally, that ever raised a culture, mathematics, architecture, city planning, astronomy. It was, all of it traces to the ancient Greek democracy. Sparta gave the world almost nothing except a military garrison. And Sparta was dictatorial. So the striking thing is that while Athens and other Greek cities were democracies, there was a cultural output never before in the history of the world. And now, so you have on parallel direct democracy and cultural output. It doesn't take much, and the Greek historian Herodotus realized it even then, 2,500 years ago, that the two of them are connected. Free people are also creative people. Free people are also very good fighters, because they are fighting not for some oligarchs that while they are starving. They are fighting for their own. The short answer is, it was about 200 years, six generations, almost 200 years, that democracy was like, and at the same time, that the cultural output of the Athenians was phenomenal, never heard of in the history of humankind. And the argument is disconnected. Now, the next chapter, chapter 5 compares Athens to the United States. And I'm not going to it, but as you can imagine, the Athens come out with flying colors on almost every score. It was a libertarian paradise, freedom for the male citizens of Athens. They were as free as you can imagine. The life was meaningful. It was just compared to the United States or compared to France or Argentina. I mean, it was paradise. Recalling had slavery and recalling women discriminated. But for the male citizens, a great number of people, it was almost paradise. There is no comparison between Athens and United States. Then chapter 6 proceeds to look at a neighbor of you, France, Switzerland. The only country, Switzerland is an oligarchy, but on that vicious oligarchy, there is a certain constraint, and that is direct democracy. The people, if they get really fed up, and if they can escape the brainwashing of the Swiss media, the people have a measure of power. So Switzerland, you'd say that maybe it's 10% direct democracy, 90% oligarchy. And as in the case of Athens, as in the case of tribal society, Switzerland is one of the happiest, freest, most successful country in the world. The most innovative country in the world. Not the United States, but Switzerland. The little Switzerland, per capita, of course, is the most innovative country in the world. And it goes down the list. In the book, I list out all of Swiss achievements. And again, led to the conclusion that the country that is the most democratic country in the world is also one success. Coincident. This is still that direct democracy, as Herodotus said, democracy is just a wonderful thing. And then the next looks at examples of direct democracy in a contemporary world, of pure direct democracy. One of them is the Berlin Philharmonic. I'm not qualified. I love music, but according to most experts, the Berlin Philharmonic is best orchestra in the world. Now, what is the secret? Well, you have the greatest achievement in the world in terms of performance is the Berlin Philharmonic. And it so happens, again, that the Berlin Philharmonic is a direct democracy, that the conductor is hired by the musicians. Every major equivalent of the Athenian assembly, every major decision is made by the musician themselves. Last I've heard, there was 100. So, yeah, freedom, democracy, and community. I'll give you one more example, and that is the the largest worker property. It's called Mondragon, mm-hmm. And it's a Basque, the Basque region of Spain. And again, it's not a direct democracy. It's a combination of direct democracy and managerial elite. It's somewhere in between. But the people, the workers, have the ultimate authority. And again, it's an extremely successful. First of all, on many levels, the cooperative is extremely successful. Enterprise. It's one of the largest in Spain. It has many, it has supermarkets, and it's successful. And while at the same time, we have workplace democracy. So there's no bosses, and the people are in charge. So you have the benefits of workers, like in the Paris Commune and stuff like that. The workers are in charge, and yet it's a very successful operation. Again, showing that, and there I gave a few other examples. Iceland is another example, a particular episode in Icelandic history. So all of it together provides empirical proof or near proof that the best system of government and the only way out of our predicament, right? We are in a bad shape. We are not in the United States only. We are, world now is being, to quote Thomas Jefferson, we are being the reason why we have so many problems. Perpetually, my freedom is being eroded. Why we are facing in the next 200 years or something like that, extinction. It could come even earlier. The all that is misgovernment. As Jefferson said, we could have paradise on earth if we were just not misgoverned. And he's right. We could eliminate hunger. We can eliminate poverty, not only in the United States, the entire world. We can eliminate hunger, we can eliminate poverty. We can, if we just had, if we just were a governed world, and the only proven good government is the one provided by genuine democracy, not American democracy style, not American style democracy, but genuine democracy. I hope I wasn't too long in elaborating on that point.
No, thank you very much. And I'll tell you what, Modi, I'll be honest with you, this connection is not very good. So I hope that what you said, you know, came through. So I think the best thing to do, because I don't want to, and we've gone on for almost a half an hour. I'm going to just put all this on the show. And you mentioned everything I wanted to talk about: Switzerland, Iceland, Athens, Mondragon. I would like to point out that after the reform and opening up in China in 1978, much of the agricultural system from the Mao era remained in place, and there are huge agricultural cooperatives in China that are very, very successful, and they are governed by the farmers and the local people. They have cooperative stores all over the country, and it's a direct produce from the farmers direct to the people, with no middlemen. So I think there's others. You talked about Berlin, the Berlin Philharmonic, which I wanted to hear about. And it's just, you know, I just printed out the table of contents because I have not had a chance to read it, but I'm going to read it. And it's free for everybody. You just click on Modi's website or click on I'll actually upload the books so you get a chance. They're free. I mean, he just spells it out. I mean, the table of contents is like, you know, 11 or 12 pages long, short bullet, half page, one page topics that walk you through 263 pages of hope and positivism about the way the world can be better, especially in the what we call the Western democracies. It sounds to me like the West adopted the totalitarian Spartan model and then slapped the name democratic on it, but yet it's much more Spartan than Athenian. And of course, you know, you mentioned the Macedonians. Alexander the Great killed his father to gain power. Yeah, what a guy.
and he killed many, many, many other people. He was driven. I mean, what is he running about, killing all these people? I mean, what's his motivation? But we are told, it's again another example of distortion. We are told that he's Alexander the Great. I never call him the Great. It's Alexander, is Alexander the Little. And it's another thing that people don't realize. He was a very good general, but he was also a very lucky general, because what happens in Persia, that is it's hereditary. Right? Get to be the emperor of Persia, because he was born. And it so happened that he was not fighting the founders, somebody like Cyrus. He would have never conquered Persia. It was a coward of the man he was facing, on the other hand. For example, one of the famous battles. The guy simply runs away. So he runs away, even though there were the Macedonians were outnumbered by God knows how much. But he runs away, so everybody else runs away. So he was also very lucky man. But the point is, again, the propaganda. Alexander the Great, really. A parricide. I mean, he was willing to do anything to. And for example, another crime. One of the ancient cities of Greece was Thebes. Thebes.
Thebes. Yeah.
He simply raised it to the ground. The Greeks were all of them, and that's the kind of guy we are told. He's Alexander the Great. My university, there is a statue of that guy. If I were a terrorist, I would
have. Where is the statue?
In Wayne State, in Michigan.
Oh, in Michigan. Okay.
No, not here. My ex university.
Well, Modi, I tell you what, we're really frustrated with the connection, and you got up at 3 in the morning to do this, because it's 8 in the morning here in France, so I just want to thank you. I'm going to read this, and I'm excited to read it. I did read your other book, Encyclopedia of Domestic Assassinations. I did read A Revolutionary Toolkit, and this seems to be the 8 billion cheers for direct democracy seems to be a summation of your previous work, and I have not seen your video. I will watch that, and I will put your website so that people can download all of this. I will also put a link to your three previous shows that were so popular, and then the recent one we did in September, and also the article that you submitted and that I published. And let's pray that we have a better connection next time. And so many thanks, Modi, for staying up all night. And lovely to have you on. And let's keep our fingers crossed that the recording comes through, and that my editor can do the transcript correctly. Okay.
Okay, and I keep my fingers crossed for the quality of the recording, and also for.
I want to come visit you someday in Argentina. So you and Donna take care of yourselves, and we'll talk soon.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Good morning.